Your Humanities Half Hour is brought to you by the Northern Marianas Humanities Council.
Welcome to Your Humanities Half Hour. I'm Catherine Perry. The Northern Marianas Humanities Council has sponsored a creative writing workshop this summer, led by longtime Saipan visitor, novelist, journalist, and writer-in-residence at Kenyon College in Ohio, Dr. P.F. Kluga. Also joining us for our interview today is Galvin Guerrero, Northern Marianas College instructor and workshop participant. Dr. Kluga and Galvin, welcome to Your Humanities Half Hour.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Catherine.
So this workshop, Dr. Kluga, started in July. Give us an idea about why this workshop was held.
Well, I think it's common knowledge that a lot of people have ideas about writing. They think there is a story in their life somewhere. They think it has value. They want to leave behind perhaps a record of their feelings and their reactions to them. And so they attempt to write. And that's usually where it stops and dies. You know, after a page or two, they don't know where to begin, how to end, and what should be in the middle. And that about covers it. Well, in this workshop, we do two main things. First of all, we get them writing, and we examine their writing. How to get a story off to a fast start. How to engage the reader, how to hook the reader so that they keep reading, and how to sort of bring the story from a first act to a second act to a third act, a beginning, an introduction, a conflict or an adventure or a discovery, and then finally a resolution. So it's about writing, and secondly, and equally important, maybe more important, is about writing for an audience. A lot of people are Twittering and tweeting and diary writing and journal keeping, and that's fine, no problem with that. But what we do is different. Those other things are for an audience of one. They are private documents. Hide them from your parents. Tuck them under your pillow. Put them away somewhere. It's all about you. You're the subject. You're the writer. You're the audience. It's a closed circuit. This is about writing for an audience of strangers and making what matters to you matter to them. So it's about the techniques of writing, but it's also about writing for someone you don't know.
Galvin, this was quite a time commitment. What made you decide to sign up for this creative writing workshop?
Well, I do a lot of writing. Dr. Kluga said, I do it for myself. And in college, I took a couple of creative writing classes, and I loved it. And I just wanted to pursue it. And it's hard to do on your own. It helps to have a professor to take a look at your work, give you critique. It's great to do it in a workshop environment, so you get to see how other people are interpreting it. And I actually loved it. I mean, normally on a Saturday afternoon, I'm taking a nap. But I couldn't wait to get there, and the time flies. I mean, it runs for 2 to 4 hours, and I hardly, or 2 to 3 hours, and I hardly notice the time go by. It's been great.
I have the same feeling. I've enjoyed it. You're a teacher, and you're not always clicking your heels with happiness when you enter a classroom or when you're leaving it. You know, there are good and bad days, and I have felt good about this group. I think we've made progress. The system works that the students submit something in advance. They email it, in this case, to the Humanities Council. By late Saturday morning, the paper is copied there. We make copies for everyone who's going to be sitting around the table Saturday afternoon. We put it on the table, and we say, let's talk about this. And it's not rocket science, but it has to be diligent. Where did this story please you? Where did it puzzle you? What do you think this story is about? Is it getting off to a fast enough start? Is it just, going along and not building momentum as it goes. And here you have an audience of people reading your work and commenting upon it, and that is a gift. It's not a torture. It's not an embarrassment. You know, you have people reading your stuff. I'm a novelist. I write documents that are in rough draft form, maybe 400 pages long, typewritten and double-spaced. Who do I have to show it to? I can't ask my friends to read it. Not if I want the friendship to last. And I'm not sure I can ask my wife to read it. I hesitate sometimes because what if she doesn't like it, this thing that I've been working on for 2 years? So here you have an interested audience, neither fans nor foes, looking over your work, and you realize you're all in the same boat. You're trying to get a piece of writing to work, and you're trying to get some guidance, and you're trying to get a sense of what it's like to write for an audience.
Gavin, how was that critique experience for you with your peers?
I loved it. I really do love it because, you know, you write something and it's crystal clear to you what everything means, what the emotions are, what the conflict is, and then it's quite a revelation when you realize that other people don't get it. And so it really, I think it's been illuminating for me. And I love getting the critique. Of course, it's nerve-wracking. You know, I get nervous. I'm like, you know, my ears turn red. I get a little warm in the face. I'm like, oh my gosh, who likes to be criticized? But it's not, I wouldn't call it criticism. I would call it more like questions or challenges to, and it's all, I think everyone is there for the right reason to push your story forward and as it grows and it evolves. And so in that regard, it's welcome input and critique.
On the second half of our show, we do want to hear a little bit more about your personal story and how it developed. But Dr. Kluge, I noticed on the application form for this workshop, the applicants were supposed to answer a couple of questions. How would you rate your writing skills? Excellent, good, or fair? And how would you rate your interest in writing? Very strong, strong, or not so strong? Let me ask you, would you have accepted somebody who maybe their writing skills were not excellent or good, or maybe their interest was not too strong, and why?
Well, anyone would have to wonder and ask the question, you know, if your interest is not strong, why are you doing this? I don't recall any quite like that. But frankly, anyone who cared enough to apply, if there were room, and there was room, I would admit. This kind of seminar, if you've got people and you're examining their work, I think can go up to 8 or 9 people. If it went beyond that, you'd have to have a second seminar. So it's intense. Everybody's going to have bad and good days. Nobody service aces a short story. Every word, every paragraph is a decision of some kind, and you're not going to be 100% right, and you have to realize that. It can always be made better. And anyone who was willing to put their talent on the line and take a chance, I'm for. I tell my students back in Ohio that a conventional course, if you do the reading, if you take notes on the lectures, you're probably going to be okay. You might not get an A, but you'll probably get a B. Unless you rob a convenience store, you're not going to get a C. That's the way grading goes these days. So you don't beat up on them, but I say I respect. This is different. This is not like the conventional course where you do the reading, take notes, and spit it back out on a test, on an examination paper. This is about your talent. It's about trying to write. And I respect those students for gambling a little bit, taking a chance on their talent. It's a tricky business. Sometimes I've had students, not here, but back in Ohio, come in and they're red-eyed and they're tired and they've been asking, and they've obviously been going through hell all night long working on a paper about, say, the death of a grandparent. And it comes to me to say, I know this meant a lot to you, but this reads like a Hallmark condolence card. It doesn't read like a story, you know? So it's this kind of a game, and it is sometimes rough and unforgiving. My hats go off to any students who enroll in my workshop, and my hat goes off a second time to the ones who stay.
Well, talking about that particular scenario, the death of a loved one, do you ever find your students ever have any kind of emotional catharsis or emotional experience while trying to tell their story through this workshop?
Yes, and that can be tricky. It's usually better to let something like a death or a trauma of some kind marinate for a while, maybe a long while, and not come in the immediate aftermath of grief to write a story. You need perspective. You need any writer has to have distance on the material, a commitment to it, but a distance from it. You have to sort of be able to look at it with a critical eye, because I tell my students, writing, the first draft, when you sit down to write, first of all, you should think a little before you write down and write and kind of plan what your game is. But when you write, let it all hang out. Go for it. You know, it's your story. Fine. Amen. But then afterwards, you have to realize that this is written for an audience of strangers, and you have to imagine how it looks to them, the audience. Does what seemed hilariously funny to you go over flat with the audience? Or maybe only one person out of 10 laughs? Then you've got some thinking to do. So it's dual personality writing, schizophrenic. You write to please yourself, but then you have to step back and be the first critic of your own work.
I had a visual artist friend tell me one time, which was surprisingly, that he looks at pieces that he's completed and he thinks of ways that they should be fixed. And sometimes he actually does go back and fix them. He repaints over parts and stuff like that. Do you ever look at things that have been published that you've written and say, I could have done it better?
I know without looking back that I could have done it better, and it would make me crazy, because you're not going to go back and revise something that's been published. So I don't reread my book and think, oh my gosh, I should have done this or done that.
How do you read it?
I don't read my stuff. You know, I remember it, but I sure, you know, I mean, as someone who has read some of my early novels recently could pass a pop quiz that I would flunk on some of the details, you know. You just sort of keep moving forward and trying to turn your life into a story.
So for Galvin and the other participants of this project, were they expected to have a finished product at the end?
No, I don't think so. I don't think that can be possible in five meetings. The pieces that that have been turned in have generally been fairly short, 5, 6, 7 pages. And no, I would like to, all I can say is I like them, whatever point they started from, I want them to have advanced. If it's only just getting the introduction of the story, nailing that down, that's an accomplishment, and they can move on. No way could they complete a story, a whole story. That's the difference between speed dating and marriage. You know, we're doing speed dating here. The finished story is marriage.
We're speaking today with Dr. P.F. Kluge and Galvin Guerrero about a creative writing workshop held this summer by the Northern Mariners Humanities Council, and we'll be back after this break.
Half a day. This is Scott Russell of the NMI Council for the Humanities. Did you know that the Humanities Council awards community grants to support humanities programs? We are interested in educational programs that engage our community's cultural and intellectual interests. Any community organization or ad hoc group can apply. For complete guidelines and an application, visit our website at www.nmihumanities.org or call the staff at 235-4785.
Hafaday, this is Eulalia Villagomez of the Northern Marianas Humanities Council. Did you know that you can donate up to $5,000 to the Humanities Council through the CNMI Education Tax Credit Program? Donations from individuals and corporations qualify and can be used to offset your local wage and salary tax, BGRT, and earnings tax. Call our office at 235-4785 to see how you can support humanities programs in our community and obtain a tax credit for your donation. Thank you, and Sizus Masi.
Hafa Day. Thanks for tuning in to today's edition of Your Humanities Half Hour. We'd love to hear your thoughts about the show. We might even read part of your letter on the air. Please write NMI Council for the Humanities, PO Box 506437, Saipan MP 96950, or email radio@nmihumanities.org. That's radio@nmihumanities.org.
Welcome back to Your Humanities Half Hour. We're speaking today about a creative writing workshop held this summer, and our guests are longtime Saipan visitor, novelist, journalist, and writer-in-residence at Kenyon College in Ohio, Dr. P.F. Kluge, and also Galvin Guerrero, Northern Marianas College instructor and workshop participant. Galvin, we want to hear about your story. Tell us.
Oh, wow. I hope I don't get run off the island. It sounds so Hollywood. What's your story about? Well, it takes place here. My story takes place, uses a local funeral of a deceased former governor, and the funeral serves as a platform or a catalyst for this couple. The husband is the son of the deceased governor, who himself is running for governor. And the wife is supposed to be this kind of like your typical campaigning local wife who's supposed to be there by your side and smiling and shaking hands and going through all the social niceties that all campaigns involve. And the funeral just kind of, it reminds them of how much they don't want to be on Saipan and how much they want to leave. And I'm still not sure how the story is going to end.
Is that okay, Dr. Kluge, to start a story and not know how it's going to end?
Yes, I think you try to plan it as much as you can. You try and see as far into it ahead as you can, you know, with the high beams. But you never see to the end of the road. Any plan that you have will only be rough. It won't be like a blueprint or a recipe, do this, do that, do that. Finished over. It's not that, you know, it'll try to plan the story, but then realize this, that the story will take on a life of its own. A character who was supposed to be interesting turns out to be boring, and some lesser character won't shut up. I mean, it's infuriating, it's magic, it'll keep you up at night because the story will take on a life of its own. Now, with Galvin's story, the one thing that I liked instantly is that it was well written. I do like people to at least write clean sentences. You know, I don't want to be a high school or grammar school teacher circling mistakes, you know, that disfigure a story. So we didn't have to do that. We could discuss the story itself. And here I confronted an account of a Saipan funeral, and a couple who were first the wife and then later the husband going through doubts about remaining on Saipan, thoughts of leaving. They're communicating with each other, and that's sort of where the story, and contemplating departure, not yet even aware quite of what the costs of that departure would be. You know, sort of thinking about leaving Saipan. First thing I said, I remember in the account of the funeral, he describes a whole lot of people there, the whole mix of relatives and friends and particularly...
Everybody.
And well, and it's a political funeral. It's a governor. So he described... But he didn't... I wasn't seeing it. I wanted to say, there's that person who betrayed him. There's that person who was swinging a deal that was way off the books on public land. There's that person who was hooking investors and ripping them off. There was that person who borrowed his car, and it had betel nut and beer cans in the back of it and a dent in the front of it when he returned it. I wanted to see it specifically. Don't just tell me, show me, dramatize it. And that was, I think, the focus of his first set of revisions. Then there was a sort of heart-to-heart talk between the husband and wife, sort of quo vadis, where are we going? And I said, okay, but this can't end just with a heart-to-heart conversation. There has to be some turmoil, some complication. What are we going to do? What's my family going to think? I'm leaving again. It can't just be I'm walking away, taking a jet plane back to Tacoma.
Uh-huh.
It should be something else, you know. So that's, I think, will be the focus for Galvin as he continues the story. And I'm in no rush to see them get on that plane, because I think Saipan is an interesting place to write about. I think it's more interesting than people here who live here realize. If you visit once in a while, you see enormous changes and shocking surprises. You see changes if you live here gradually. You get used to them. You're not jolted by them the way I am when I come back after several years' absence. I think this is an extraordinary place. All sorts of things are going on. History finds its way to this place. All sorts of rogues and heroes and ordinary people find their way to this place. All sorts of nationalities find their way to this place. Saipan always is unpredictable. I think it generates all sorts of stories, and that's what my most recent novel was about, and that's a baton I hope gets passed to local writers yesterday.
Well, Galvin, I have to ask, what was your inspiration for this story?
Don't run me off the island now. Well, quite honestly, I don't know why, but in the past few months, a lot of people have been dying, and I've been going to a lot of funerals, and I would sit in these funerals and my mind would wander. And I just thought, gosh. So I don't know why, but when this writing workshop came up and we were told to write, I don't know why. That was on my mind. And so that's why I wrote about it. Or that's what led me to use a funeral as a platform. And it turned out to be very interesting.
Dr. Kluka, as a writer, do you usually, is it best or more frequent to draw on your personal experience for your inspiration? And is there any danger in that?
There is danger. I wrote a book which involved my family, which were my family's German-American. We had some people on the wrong side of World War II. My parents came to America separately in the 1920s, so they were, you know, Americans, staunch Americans. Never looked back, but, you know, there was that sense of relatives overseas, your hometowns being bombed and leveled by Allied bombers, British and American, and what's happening to those people. My first childhood memory is sending, when I was five, my mother and a bunch of neighborhood aunts putting together packages for Germany to send back, you know, Crisco, razor blades, toothbrushes, things of that kind. And to get that down, I think it was necessary for me to grow older and possibly for some people I cared about to die. I'm putting it that frankly, you know, there was personal stuff. When you deal with personal stuff, even if you call it fiction and change the names, you're dealing with live ammunition, let's face it. So that one I had to let wait a while, that experience, before I could write about. In general, you draw on some personal experience all the time. That's ingredient one of fiction. But then you lie, you imagine, you make things up, you say what if, you consider possibilities. That's what turns true biography or journalism into fiction, that imaginary and creative element. And the old line about fiction is, it's not a true story, but there's truth in it. So it's a confluence of memory and imagination. Sometimes it's 80% memory and 20% imagination, and you sense a lot of things are real and only the names have been changed. Others are 80% imagination, Harry Potter. So, you know, the proportions, the percentages may vary, but it's inevitable that there's going to be a lot of memory and experience that was lived, and then there's going to be some changes made, and that's the role of imagination.
Dr. Kluka, there's one thing you said in one of our seminars. I referred to a quote I once heard that you write what you know, and then you said, well, yes, you write what you know, and then you write what you think you know about what you know, or what you don't know.
What you don't know about what you know.
Right.
Then you're off to the races.
Yeah.
Then you're in the game.
And that's where I'm stuck right now, is I'm writing about what I don't know, and especially characters. Earlier, Dr. Kluge said that these characters come to life, and they take on a life of their own, and they start talking back to you. And that's where I'm at right now. I thought I understood this character, and this one character is just is stubborn. She won't do what I want her to do. And it's like, wait a minute, you know? So trying to understand that character better, trying to give that character voice so that it's not, so that it's real, even though it's fake. So it has more truth to it. It's hard.
So you said you don't know what the end of your story will be, but do you have any idea what the characters are going to have to go through before they get to the end? Do you have any ideas about that yet?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's the decision, here's this guy that's running for governor, is he just going to get up and leave because there's the legacy of his father, right? It's the family legacy. And then also we're going to trying to work in some current or not so current political issues. If this guy that's running for governor is the right guy to run for governor and he is not governor and sort of the island falls apart, then there's that to weigh on his conscience. And then there's their relationship. Do they stay together? Do they not? A lot of questions about where to go next, but primarily about, like Dr. Kluge was saying, the consequences of whatever they choose.
He'll be working on this a while yet, and I think he'll be working pretty well.
What do you anticipate to do with your story when you're done with it?
Revise it would be the answer. I mean, you never get it right in the first draft. There's too many decisions. Every word's a decision. So you when I have a piece, I read it. When it's done, 300-400 pages, I read it and I make a list of things that are questionable, that might need to be cut or added to or transplanted.
Sounds painful.
Yeah, and I could have 6 pages of bullet points of stuff that I have to think about. And then I put that list aside and I read it again 2 or 3 weeks later without consulting the first list. And then a third time that happens, a third list. Then I look at the list and I see if the same thing has occurred to me independently 2 or 3 times. That's pretty smoking gun evidence that I need to fix something. So, welcome to the club. That's how it works.
I tell you what, I'm spending a lot more time now thinking than writing, like just trying to figure things out, imagining, occupying this imaginary universe, walking around in it, trying to figure out who these people are. So I'm spending a lot more time right now thinking than writing.
Well, as we come down to the end of our show, Dr. Kluge, I want to ask, I know it's impossible, but could you give just a few words of advice, maybe 3 points, to people who have, as you mentioned in the beginning of our show, thought about writing, wanted to write, maybe started writing something, but just haven't made it happen yet?
Well, I think they have to man up, as we would say, or woman up, and risk taking a class like mine, a workshop like mine. The other thing I say, though, is that you're hopeless as a writer if you do not read. You would not dream of writing music if you had not played it or listened to it. You'd be clueless. So, too, I mean, the reading that you do is the breathing in, and the writing is the breathing out. You need both. You have to read great literature to know what's been accomplished before you. And you also have to read enough a lot of sort of commercial stuff that sells to know what sells and what is the marketplace. You cannot fly blind. You must read in order to write. That's non-negotiable. That has to be.
Well, thank you both for your time today.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
We've been speaking today with novelist, journalist, and writer in residence at Kenyon College in Ohio, Dr. P.F. Kluge, also a longtime SciPen visitor and former resident, and also Galvin Guerrero, Northern Marianas College instructor and a participant in the workshop, sharing some tips and ideas and hopefully some motivation to get some new writers going that were shared at the Creative Writing Workshop held by Northern Marianas Humanities Council this summer. This has been Your Humanities Half Hour. I'm Catherine Perry.
This program was supported by a We the People grant awarded to the Northern Marianas Humanities Council from the National Endowment for the Humanities. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities or the Northern Marianas Humanities Council.